for 8 o'clock. So again, this is the last part of the retreat. Sometimes I say that, but it's not really the last part. Some of you are staying on to this afternoon and even tomorrow. Some lucky enough to stay a few more days. And there's always another retreat coming soon. At least that's what it feels like for me. You're always sitting up here, teaching one retreat and another retreat and the next retreat. Because even on Sunday evening, we have a Sunday afternoon, a group of Thai people are coming over, bringing over the Katina Road from Thailand, and also staying to do a mini retreat for 3 or 4 days. So there's always a retreat going on here, it seems. But you know how difficult it is to get time off? And sometimes even to get on a BF retreat is very difficult, so I've been told. It's getting more and more popular. So what I wanted to let you know, that this is a retreat centre where we don't just have these organised retreats where, you know, 60 people come all in one go, and where we have talks in the morning and talks in the evening and interviews. We also have something called self-retreats, which are getting increasingly popular. On the self-retreat, you know, you book in, as long as you've done a 9-day retreat with me before and you haven't gone crazy, you haven't been blacklisted, then, you know, you've got permission to do what we call self-retreat. And the self-retreat, you know, you just find a time between the organised retreats when there is spare rooms. If there's an organised retreat coming on, not just by me but by other teachers, obviously they take up all the space. But outside of those times, there's many weeks every month where there's no organised retreat being held here. And it means that, you know, you can see that on the calendar and you can ring up poor Daniel, who does all the hard work for no money at all, just for the privilege of giving Ajahn Brahma breakfast every morning. So you can give her a call or email or whatever, and to book in for self-retreat. And as long as there's a space there, there's no organised retreat, you come here and you make your own breakfast. Now, there's lots of stuff. You can bring stuff off if you want, or you just go over to Bodhinyana Monastery. We've got more food in our pantry than in the supermarket. So you can always take this and take that, and, you know, for your breakfast. And for lunch, you know, you just come along and just to Bodhinyana Monastery, walk over there, take lunch with the monks, and then come back here in the evening. It's such a simple lifestyle for you. And if you want to listen to any talk, then there's over 1,000 talks on the internet. There's so many CDs and stuff on your iPod. You don't really need me here anymore. I often thought of trying to raise some funds to get this doll like in Madame Tussauds of me. And just sit me here and just, you know, whatever talk you want, you can actually program it. And just, you know, I'll just give a talk. But that means that I can be in my cave and retire. Just get the likeness. And then a lot of you won't notice the difference. Remember, it's true, in Thailand they made a wax figure of Ajahn Chah when he got sick, and they put that wax figure, you know, in his hut. And it was so realistic that many, many people, especially Westerners who went to go and visit him, they saw this figure of Ajahn Chah sitting there, and they thought, this is a really fantastic monk. Look how still he meditates. And his reputation grew enormously. And it was just a model of him. So you could do that, but the serious point is, it means that you can carry on your meditation, if you've got a few days, and just come here and do a self-retreat. Now, it is, again, very reasonable, $25 a day to stay here. And I can't imagine how much these hotels cost to stay in. $200-$300 a night? It's ridiculous. And don't worry about that, because we do make ends meet. We just get, from your donations, a little bit extra to do more upgrades here and there every year. So we don't need to raise prices or anything. So I don't know what they do with the money in these hotels. Somebody's really making a lot of money out of you guys. But it's so cost-effective that, you know, you can get a cheap flight. even though there are these cheap airlines, obviously with Singapore Airlines is the very best, because we've got to keep James in his job. But you can get to a reasonable place. It's only, I said, 4.5, 5 hours from Singapore to here, so it's really close. It's not a long distance. It means you can come and do self-retreats here. And as long as you know just what to do, then you're just left by yourself. And it's very, very wonderful, very peaceful, a very nice way of spending a week or two. I think for those self-retreats, if it's only for the weekend, we say no, because then you never really have time to get into some meditation. It has to be at least, what was it, done 7 days a week?
Yeah.
1 week minimum. And that means you can have a retreat whenever you want. You know what to do. You know, all the talks which I've given here, many of you have heard them before. Sometimes it's nice to get inspired. Sometimes when you hear a story, you can see it from a different angle and get more a fuller picture of what the meditation is. Sometimes the same message being put on you again and again and again. Eventually it works, just like the advertisements you see on TV. Every 5 minutes the same again and again and again. They do that because sometimes it takes time for you to understand these things. The Buddha once gave the simile of, what was it, the 5 horses. And the 5 horses simile, that there was the first horse is a very wise one, very easy to teach. As soon as the owner, the rider, gets onto the horse and tells the horse what to do, immediately, without question, the horse follows the instructions. That's horse number one. Horse number two, the driver, the rider, has to get out the whip. But just when the shadow falls on the horse's body, it knows what to do and follows the instructions 100%. That's the second horse. The third horse, the rider has to just tap it, only slightly, doesn't hurt, just tap it. And the rider, the horse knows exactly what to do and follows. The fourth horse is even more stupid and stubborn. The rider, the jockey, has to hit it once. Ow! But then it knows what to do and follows the instructions. And the fifth and last horse, whack, 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 whack. And still the horse doesn't know what to do. So which horse are you? It's amazing how many people say, fifth horse. So, no. You all know what to do. It's just a question of getting the opportunity to practice meditation. And it is difficult in Singapore, you know, and Malaysia. Malaysia not so bad, but in Singapore to find a quiet place, even in Malaysia to find such a quiet place as this, which is built as a meditation center, which is so comfortable for you, it's very hard to find a place like this. So I encourage you to carry on your practice. If you can't get on an organized retreat, because, you know, you're busy that day, you can't fit it into your schedule, you've got other things like family commitments, have a look at doing self-retreats here. Because you know the place, and you're not much of a burden. You know, sometimes, I've seen what Daniel does, you're coming at a certain time, you find your own way down here, you can always get a lift from somebody or other, and there's always Mark Transport Company. You can look after you. For a reasonable price. And sometimes Danny just leaves the key in the basket. You just pick it up and you just go into your room. You know exactly what to do, and which is fine. Oh, we should say though that, you know, that anybody who doesn't look after the place, who leaves the place dirty, you know, especially after you've been there, then you may get blacklisted. If you black up the room, then you may be blacklisted. So please look after your accommodation, because it's cheap, because we don't have cleaners come in here, you don't have room service changing your sheets every couple of days. You know, it's all keep the price down by everybody helping out. And it reminds me of that story which again some of you may remember about the five fingers simile. There were five fingers and they were one day arguing over who was the most important and powerful finger. And this finger said, I am the opposable thumb. I am the most powerful of all the fingers. Look how strong I am. See how fat I am? Fat is good. And when you say okay, when you say good, which finger do you put up? Me. I am the okay finger. That's why I am the best of you all. And this finger said, no, I am the best for this reason. I'm called the index finger. I point things out for people. I am the finger of wisdom. And to prove how important I am, if you say number one, which finger do you put up? One. Me. I am the number one finger, the finger of wisdom. I am the most important. And then the middle finger put itself up and said, I am the tallest of them all, so I see further. The second reason I'm most important, in Buddhism, we always praise the middle way. I am the middle finger. And again, to make my point totally, I am the most powerful finger, because if you put me up the other way round, you can see how powerful I am. The one finger sign, me. And that left the fourth finger, and it said, no, 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 I am the most important of all. Because when you get engaged, what ring does the finger go on? When you get married, this finger takes the ring as well. I am the finger of love and commitment. Without commitment, without love, where would there ever be a beautiful life and progress in our world? So he said, I am the finger of love and commitment. Therefore, I am more important than all of you. Now, all those four had very good arguments. Now, what do you think this one could argue? This one eventually won. All the other fingers eventually agreed the little finger was the most important. And this is the reason why. Because the little finger said, even though people use me to do the dirty work, still, though I'm used to do dirty work, when you pay respects to the Buddha, I am always closest to the Buddha. So please remember, the people who do the dirty work, who clean up their toilet and their room, they are closest to the Buddha. So if your room is dirty, I realize, yeah, you know, you're way, way from the Buddha. So this afternoon, please give. It's not that hard to look after your rooms. And again, it's a nice way of just, you know, helping out this center. Some of you give donations, or some of you give great donations. But, you know, it's also, it's not just money, it's the heart which you put into any community, any center. Just a little care which you do for things. That's really, really helps. And they say, even as a monk, I'm a big monk, and people even open doors for me. But nevertheless, I always clean my toilet bowl. My own toilet bowl. Because it gets you in touch with, you know, reality. You know, sometimes very close to reality. And it just is a wonderful little thing of humility. And just lowering your sense of ego and self. And just cleaning up, which is a wonderful thing to do. And when you do things like that, it means that you can come any time, you're easy to look after, and you can come on these self-retreats, which is a beautiful way. If you can't get on the main retreat, you can find another time, even more convenient to you, to come here and just spend, you know, a week just doing your meditation. Because when you do that, you know, in here especially, some of you already said, this place is at 3 or 4 years now, 4 years, isn't it? 5 already? Okay, almost 5, yeah. So already people have noticed that this hall is starting to build up some energy. Many of you have been going over to Bodhinyana Monastery and meditating in that hall, because that hall's been there for 30 years almost. And that really has got energy. Places do collect energy. And you don't have to be psychic to know that. And that hall over in Bodhinyana has got huge energy. The last year, somebody brought, without letting me know, a Feng Shui expert. They're just to see our monastery, and they took them into Bodhinyana Hall. And this was the first time this Feng Shui master had been in there. And the person who took them in told me afterwards that Feng Shui master couldn't believe how much powerful energy was in the front of that hall. The back was not so good. You know why? I should have told you this before, but just behind the back wall is where we store the ashes of the departed. That we call that the bone room. So if any of you are afraid of spirits and ghosts, the next time you come, I'll give you the room next time. They're fine, they don't do anything there. Any people, even any ghosts in Bodh, actually no ghosts in Bodhinyan, if there were, they'd have to be well behaved and not mess around. But that hall has got huge energy, and many of you have felt that. By that I mean, in some places it's very difficult to meditate. You feel uncomfortable. But in that place, it's always people who have difficulty meditating elsewhere. They go in there and it's easy. You get still and peaceful very quickly. And the reason is, of course, because you've built up energy in the place over the years. I contrast that to an experience I had in Kathmandu when I was leading a group on pilgrimage, and that was the place we started from, landing in Kathmandu. I think that was before they had an airport in Gaya. Not Gaya, what was it? Yeah, Bodh Gaya, yeah. Before they opened up that airport, we landed in Kathmandu. People wanted a day of sightseeing in Kathmandu. There's nothing, well, there was a few Buddhist sites there. But the first site they took us to was the old palace. And I was getting, what, I don't like looking at palaces. You know, I brought up in England, there's hundreds of palaces in there. But I was just being naughty and not following the group leader, you know, like, you know, you can imagine people do. And just, I wandered off the group, went through a doorway, and into the worst courtyard I've ever been to in my life. The energy there was just so dark, and just, you felt you just wanted to run out straight away. And, you know, I'd spent a couple of seconds in there, but, you know, even I couldn't stand it and went out. It was really dark, black energy in there. And I had to ask the guide, what on earth is in there? And that was a courtyard which every year, being a Hindu kingdom, they would slaughter animals as a sacrifice, you know, for some god or other. And of course you never knew that, but you could feel it there. A really nasty place to be. So places do have energy. And little by little, we're building up the energy in this hall here. So if you do want to meditate, having a place which is only used for meditation really, really helps. And that leads me on to how you can help and assist your meditation when you go back home. Sometimes it's difficult to find a place where you can only use for meditation. But if you are innovative, you can always find somewhere. And the classic example, I told someone about this, I think, in their interviews. There's a guy I used to know who was in United States, in New York. He was a lawyer, a criminal lawyer, in the time when New York State still had the death penalty. And so he had to defend people accused of murder, and if he made a mistake and they lost the case, his client would be executed. And if you think your job is high stress, imagine that job. You know, facing a court, maybe facing a jury, and you have to be the top of your game, because one mistake, and it literally is death for your client by the electric chair, which is not very pleasant. So he had a high stress job. He wanted to do some meditation to try and lower that stress, but it was so difficult to find a place to meditate. Every time he sat down in a corner of his room, the telephone rang, or, you know, someone disturbed him because it was a matter of life and death, they had to come out of his meditation, and it was really causing him so much stress. And he realized that if he didn't meditate, his mind was just so tired, confused, stressed, that he would not be able to do his best for his client in the afternoon. So it was really important he found a quiet place. And he was innovative. There was a cupboard in his office, which, if you go to any lawyer's office, full of papers and files and books and other documents. It's amazing how many pieces of paper lawyers have. And I've actually seen them. I'm not sure if this happens in Singapore, but you know, where the law courts are in Perth, you actually see the legal clerks, you know, the assistants. They have all these papers and books, and they wheel them in trolleys down the street. They need so much stuff. And even in times when they've got lots of stuff on the computer, still they have all this stuff. So in this guy's office, he had a cupboard full of papers and files and books. Together with his secretary, they cleaned it out totally. And they put a cushion in there. And every lunch hour for many years, he would go in his cupboard and his secretary would lock him in for half an hour. I would not let him out under any circumstances. If somebody called on the phone, "Can I speak to so-and-so?" "I am sorry, he's in his cupboard." It's a much better excuse than "he's in a meeting," which is sometimes what I always get. "No, he's in a cupboard." And his secretary would never let him out until the half an hour was finished. Because she realized from bitter experience that if he hadn't got his half an hour meditation, he was to be a pain in the bum all afternoon, you know, being miserable, being grumpy, and because he was stressed out. And he did that because he knew he was a far better lawyer in the afternoon, after he had a rest. And so I really admire the guy who found a space in a very confined office. Now, you haven't got very big apartments and houses in Singapore, but there's always some place you can use. Remember Jackson? Remember that house, your house I went to bless? And your house? And he had what's like a shelter, which you all have to have apparently, you know, in case there's any attack from anybody. That's a perfect place. It's your meditation room. So if you've got one of those little shelters in your house, because you can close the door, and it is so thick doors, it is soundproof. So people can knock at you. "Jackson, Jackson, your mother is on the phone." You can't hear them. Isn't that wonderful? Did you sell that house? Ah. But did you keep the shelter? That's a great thing to have. If you have anything like that, you know, you're not going to use it as a shelter. No one's going to attack Singapore. But instead, it's a great meditation room. So, way to go, Singapore government, by having a meditation cave in every new house. They still do that, every new house, that's Roman? Public housing, great. So if you haven't got that, you must have some little cupboard somewhere. The trouble with cupboards is they're magnetic. They attract junk. Isn't that true, Dahlia? Any spare cupboard in Jhanagram, no matter where it was located, eventually I found some of Dahlia's stuff in it. So get rid of your junk and have a nice empty box somewhere, your cupboard where you can meditate in. And if that doesn't work, and it really are in a small apartment, a corner of your bedroom, because the bedrooms are not used that much in Singapore. You're so stressed out that, you know, you're always working somewhere. If you're not working, you're eating. So the time that you're on your bed, your bedroom is very underutilized. So, you know, just have a small bed. You don't have these big beds. Have a small bed and just in the corner. Now have your meditation shrine in the corner of your house. A nice comfy cushion or a chair, one of these meditation stools, whatever is comfortable for you. And, you know, maybe have pictures of the Buddha, of your favorite monk, or whoever. Just to inspire you. A teddy bear is always good, in case you need that up. So there's a place all ready for you at any time you want to meditate. So if you need to meditate. It's not a case of where should I go. You sit somewhere and get disturbed. You sit somewhere else and you've got a cat or a dog keeps jumping all over you. You just got your place to sit. And also, don't worry about being disturbed. Because there's one lady I know, she had these two young children. Now, maybe about 6 and 4 years of age. And you know just how attached children are to their mummy. And she was getting very stressed out with her two kids. Until one day she said, "Now I'm going to learn how to meditate." But as soon as she sat down, after 2 minutes, the children would scream at her, climb all over her. She had long hair and start pulling her hair to get attention. Which meant she always had to come out of meditation. She never was given the opportunity. Until she said one day she'd had enough with her kids. She sat down, you know, in the middle of her room, crossed her legs and started to meditate. And she described what happened next. "Mummy, mummy, mummy, I need a glass of water. Mummy, mummy, I need to go poo." And she ignored them. She wasn't getting up for them. "Mummy, mummy, mummy." And they started calling over and pulling her hair and hurting. "Mummy, mummy, I really need to go toilet." And she wouldn't move. Now the kids never underestimate children's intelligence. Sometimes they really learn very quickly where mummy's weak points are. So I think the 6-year-old said, "Mummy, mummy, Johnny has turned on the gas. Mummy, mummy, Julie has got a knife out of the kitchen drawer." And that's what they said. But this was a wonderful mother. She totally ignored them and carried on meditating. They can blow up the house, they can cut themselves up into bits. I don't care, I'm going to meditate. And after about 10 minutes, all those threats, pulling of the hair and screams, they all disappeared. And it was quiet. She meditated for half an hour. And of course she didn't know whether they'd killed each other or what happened. For once she didn't care, she let go. And when she opened her eyes, after half an hour's meditation, she was so calm and so relieved, and she saw her two children playing quietly in the corner, making no noise. And from that time on, whenever she wanted to meditate, she just crossed her legs and meditate, and the kids knew, "Mummy's meditating, there's nothing we can do." She won her ability to meditate. And so it shows if you really want to, you can do it, even in a busy house. At work, you know, sometimes in Singapore, people don't respect meditation. They don't realize, as I keep on saying, that half an hour meditation at lunch hour is an investment in the afternoon. You're a much better worker. You know, you get more done in less time, and you're more friendly. Most of anger, grumpiness, even ill health comes from tiredness. So if we can just rest a little bit during the middle of the day, we actually are healthier and much kinder and more communicative worker in the afternoon. We get more done. Our work gets much better. And we're not stressed out, so when we go home we don't get upset at the people we love and live with. So it makes so much sense. But some CEOs, I don't know how they ever get to that position because they're dumb. And they don't know, and they don't realize how to get the best out of their workers by giving them permission to rest. I often say Dell Computing, one of the top companies, they have a timeout room where any employee, any time of the day when they feel stressed, can go and meditate, relax, have a cup of coffee, listen to some music or whatever. And it's screened. So no mobile signals, no SMSs, no tweets are possible. You can bring your gizmos down there, but they don't work. It's screened so you can be free from all these people trying to communicate with you. You just relax. And that's one of the reasons why it's such a successful company. It really is looking after their workers. And it makes so much sense. But if your company or business or place of work hasn't got a timeout room like that, has not got a cupboard which you can clean out, and if your boss is even more smart than those two kids and really knows how to get you out, there is always the place of last resort, the toilets. Because No matter how busy and how terrible the boss is, they will always allow you to go to the toilet. And constipation in Singapore, that happens. So if you spend half an hour in the ladies' toilet, now your boss won't criticise you. He'll probably say, oh, you poor thing. You know, maybe drink some more water or something. So, oh, yes, boss, but it's not working yet. And you're not lying. You are constipated, mentally constipated. So you can sit in the ladies' loo there. I don't know, you may be able to get a little cushion or padding you can put over the seat there to make it really, really comfortable. Don't try it cross-legged because you might fall off. But at least you can sit down there and have a bit of peace, which is all you really need, any time of the day. And so that way you continue your practice when you get home. And any place which you develop as your meditation, toilet cubicle, or whatever it is, the place you meditate, it does build up energy after a while. And of course, toilet cubicles have the extra advantage. It is a usual place for letting go. So it reminds you what you're supposed to be doing mentally. Let go! And it does mean when you have the place, it's much easier to find the time to meditate. And this is how we build up the strategies. So we've got the place, we've got the opportunities, and so then we do meditate much, much better. And when you meditate when you go back home, it gives huge health benefits, huge emotional benefits. You learn how to relax, so you live a much longer life. Your health improves so much that in our monastery in California, if you ever go to California and live there, it's a difficult place to live because everybody has to get health insurance and it's really expensive. Even though the monks who go visiting there for a while, they have to get health insurance, which is one of the reasons why the monks there, that we can't have too many monks, we just can't afford it. Because of the health insurance, unless they've got their own sponsors for health insurance. But they said that on their form for the health provider, that there is a little statement there, that if you can write there that you meditate regularly and you can get somebody like a monk to actually to authorize, yes, this is a meditator, I can guarantee this. The amount you have to pay for your health premium is substantially reduced. You actually save money because it is so well documented by many, many scientific reviews that meditators have a much better health. So it's great for your health. So if you don't think you'll find the time, can you find a time to go to hospital and be in bed with a coronary? Have you got time to do that? If you haven't, you better start meditating. It saves time by going to doctors and going to hospitals, which take a lot of time. Now, I know I'm putting many doctors out of a job by saying such things, but you have enough clients, so you don't have to worry about Ajahn Brahm is going to take your salary down by if everybody meditating. But it's good for you to be able to do that. And also, when we talk about all this anger and guilt and negativity and depression which happens in places like Singapore, even Malaysia and Australia as well, sometimes where does that all come from? It's because everyone is so tired. That tiredness is one of the worst modern diseases. Not cancer, not HIV, not all these other bird flus or whatever's coming around. Why is it that you may have a bird flu or SARS or something? Some people get it, some people don't, and they live in the same house. Why is it that some people's immune system is so depressed they catch everything, and other people, they go wherever they like and they just don't get sick? Why is that? A lot of it is because modern people are incredibly exhausted. You're tired. You know how to work. You're brilliant at that. But do you know how to rest? Can you go to bed at night? And as soon as your head hits that pillow, you're fast asleep. Can you let go? So what you're learning in meditation here, how to let go, be in the moment, let go of all these worries of the past, all the pain which other people have caused you, and all those other difficulties which you have faced. You're learning how to put that aside so that you can rest well. You don't have much time to sleep in the busy lives in Singapore, so whatever time you have, use it efficiently. It's one of the reasons why that I emphasize one of Ajahn Chah's greatest teachings. That was when, I only heard this because it was never given to any monk. It was given to this man from Sydney, who went to visit Ajahn Chah maybe a year or two before he got too sick to teach anymore. He heard this was a very famous and very well-attained monk, and so travelled all the way from Sydney to Thailand just for one purpose, to see Ajahn Chah. And it's a difficult place to find. From Bangkok you have to go up to the northeast, which not many people go there because it's not scenically beautiful, it's just a flat plain, very boring. And from the getting the train, I think in that time, to Ubon to find the way to the monastery was about 12 kilometers outside of town. And when he got to the monastery to find out where in this big monastery Ajahn Chah was, and he finally made it to Ajahn Chah's hut. And he would always receive the guests and visitors underneath his hut in the open area below. And there were so many people waiting to speak to Ajahn Chah. And he had to just be on the edge, waiting for a chance. Hour, 2 hours, I think 2.5 hours passed by. And it looked like he would never be close enough to ask his questions, for which he came all the way to Thailand to ask. He was disappointed. He got up and left. All that way for nothing, he thought. But as he got up, he was enough of a good Buddhist. He realized if you want to get the best teachings, you have to do some cleaning. So if you really want to get the best teachings later on, clean up your rooms, clean up the place, because this is what happens next. He picked up a broom and started sweeping the grounds because he saw other monks doing this. And he was sweeping, thinking, at least I can make some good karma. I've come all this way, sweep the grounds of a holy monastery. And he was an Australian. At least he had some wisdom there. And as he was sweeping the grounds, he told me over in the dining hall in Bodhinyana many years ago, I remember him saying this, he felt someone touch his shoulder. And he turned around, and that hand touching his shoulder belonged to Ajahn Chah. And he was so excited. Ajahn Chah was a great monk. You know, he was really perceptive and incredibly compassionate. He did have psychic powers. I can say that out of respect. You can't, because you never saw them. He obviously saw that that man had come a long distance and was frustrated. All these other Thai people, they were all around him asking the same old stupid questions. You know, give me a number, what's the lottery next week? But this guy had serious questions. So he came up to this guy, and through the interpreter, he told this Australian man, if you're sweeping the grounds, give it everything you've got. And that was a simple teaching, and then Ajahn Chah left. And the guy from Sydney understood it. It wasn't just referring to sweeping. It's whatever he did in his life. If he was in the office working, he would give working 100%. If he was having fun in the evening, going out having a party, you give partying 100%. It was time to meditate, 100%. It was time to sleep, 100%. He would let go of all the past and future. This is sleep time, it's not business time. If you're piloting the aircraft, 100% please. I travel on Singapore a lot. I don't want to die. So whatever you're doing, he said, give it 100%. And that guy from Sydney said that very simple one-line teaching changed his whole life. He became very successful in his business. And he had a great relationship with his family. Because when he was with his wife, that was 100% with his wife. Playing with his kids, he forgot about everything else and just played with his kids as if they were the only thing in the world. When he was at work, 100% working, resting, sleeping at night, 100% sleep. Isn't that a fantastic teaching? You learn that here by focusing. When it's time to watch the breath, 100% watching the breath. When it's time to clean your room, 100%. And as I often say, I think I said this in the fundraiser we did recently in KL. I said, when you're giving a donation, give it everything you've got. I'm only joking, don't do things like that. But you know, you can see what's going on here. You're really getting into every aspect of your life. The problem is, as you found out in meditation, you're meditating and you're thinking about work. You go to work in a couple of days' time, you're thinking about meditating. You know, that's what I said earlier. When you're meditating, you're sleeping. When you go to bed, you can't go to sleep before you're awake. They're crazy people here. When you're here, you're thinking of lunch. When you're lunch, you're talking about work. Why can't we actually be here with 100% with what we're doing? You know, that's the secret of a successful, happy life. And surprise, surprise, you don't get so tired. You know that little book which we printed in Singapore? I think, was it Wise Words from a Fat Monk or something? So what was it called?
I think it was the Wisdom of Silence.
Wisdom of Silence. No, it's a very small book. Sorry? Oh, Little Wisdom Makes Big Difference, yeah. That Little Wisdom Makes Big Difference. The first story in there, it was the cartoon of this man holding so many different things with so many arms. And it's the quote which I said, a busy person is not a person who does a lot of things, it's a person who does a lot of things all at the same time. That's a busy person. You know, one phone is answering the mobile phone, another one is sort of eating the lunch and your mind is thinking on the computer. That's a busy person, doing too many things at the same time and never giving what you're doing 100%. Giving 30% for this, 20% for something else, 15% for another job. That's what makes you a busy person. And you don't get much done. You ever notice that busy people don't get much achieved? But sometimes they're just busy bodies, that's all. But sometimes you see some people and they just flow as if they're doing nothing. At the end of the day, their output is huge. I always remember this builder once telling me that he got a job in this mansion in Sydney, this incredibly wealthy person. And this wealthy person said, every tradesman, if it's even the plumber or the electrician, I want you to get the very best. Now, none of these apprentices, none of these people learning their trade. This is my house, I want it to be the very, very best. I can afford it, I don't care how much you pay. I want the number one plumber in Sydney, the best electrician in the whole of Australia, because I want it to be done perfect. And one day, the owner of the house, the client, went to visit to see the progress. And he blew up because one of the people laying the bricks was like a 17-year-old. He said, I said the experts, not these learners. I don't want crooked bricks. He hadn't read my story with the two bad bricks. I want perfect bricks, every one. And you're hiring this young guy who hasn't learned his trade yet. And the builder said, stop a while and look at this guy. He doesn't look like he's working hard. But he has such a beautiful rhythm, like a natural born bricklayer. And he just puts the cement down, the brick goes on, the next cement, the brick goes down. He had such a beautiful rhythm that every bit was incredible. And he went so fast without anyone realizing it. He said, he is the best bricklayer, even though he's only so young. But it never looked like that. The people who get the most work done are just people who flow. And it looks so easy, but they get so much achieved. And those people who sweat and work and struggle and force and stuff, they get hardly anything achieved. Just like anyone who's been struggling and meditating and walking and meditating, they get nowhere. But some of you just flown through the day. You waft into the meditation hall, no one knows you're here. And you're sitting there and nobody knows that you, what you're doing. And in your hut, you know, they see you maybe in the morning time, but you never speak to them. And then they go out and they come and you don't know what's happening. And you think they're not putting any effort at all in. And the best example of that is my friend Teddy. Look, 100% being a teddy bear. Not trying to be anything else. Do you see how happy he is? Or is it a she? Or an it? But that's actually how we learn in meditation. So what you learn here, it's not just, okay, when I go back, I've got to sit down and get into jhanas. If you understand that, you're missing the point. What we're teaching you here is more deep. It's the reason why you get into jhanas. It's the base why you can live a happy life. It's how you can be a CEO without getting so stressed out and tired and angry. These are the little techniques of 100% effort, being here, not planning too much. I've got this saying, and I practice it. I try not to plan very much at all. And when I don't plan, sometimes it goes wrong. Sometimes I miss out things. So when I don't plan, I get into trouble often, because, you know, I make mistakes. But I don't mind doing that, because I find when I do plan, things go wrong anyway. Either way it goes wrong. Haven't you discovered that? You make so many different plans, plan A, B, C, D, E, F, the whole alphabet of contingencies. And the way life works out, none of those contingencies apply. All those plans for nothing. So when you understand that life, it always goes wrong, in that sense, you say, well, I plan, it goes wrong. You don't plan, it goes wrong anyway. What the hell? I'm a waste of time planning. I'm going to enjoy myself before it goes wrong. So you don't plan so much, you don't worry so much. When you learn that technique, it means you don't get so tired, you don't have high blood pressure, it means you can eat lots of things you like without being in trouble, because the mind sort of balances the cholesterol and the diabetes and whatever else you have, because the mind is a forerunner of all things. You make the mind cholesterol free, all those things which block it and give you mind attacks, not heart attacks. All those things which stop it being balanced. You get your mind healthy, and that's the most important thing of all. And you'll find that out in your life. So this is what you're learning here. Good health, good emotional stability, learning how to rest, learning how to be here, learning how to get lots of things done without seeming to be stressed out, and enjoying your life, whatever you're doing, giving everything you've got. Those are the teachings which I hope you take away from here. Yeah, it is also about getting enlightened and getting jhanas and seeing your past lives and all that sort of stuff. But if you haven't seen your present life yet, it's a waste of time trying to see your past lives. So you can see we get to the real, we get here, and then we find everything works out very, very beautifully. So hopefully this sums up what you've been doing in the last few days here. And you know the retreats always go on. They go on, anything you're doing in life, you know, you always have the opportunity to be here. even especially those of you in Singapore. Now there are traffic jams, especially on the way to work. Traffic jams are such a wonderful part of our modern life. Because in a traffic jam it teaches you how to stop and be here. And you can't control the traffic jam. Have you ever gone to the red traffic light and said, please, 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 please stay green, please stay green, please stay green, I'm really in a hurry, please, please, please. Do you really think the traffic light will listen to you? It can't even hear you. It's programmed. And you can't interfere with it. You're wasting your time. So being in traffic in a place like Singapore, you have to let go. Whatever time you get to the destination, that's the time you get there. You can't do anything about it. So isn't that wonderful? When you get stuck, you say, stop. And you remember the donkey. Stop. Your car's stopped. Let your mind stop. Don't send your mind to the office before the car arrives. And that way it reminds you to be slow and to enjoy the moments. It's a great way. When you're driving, you have to be aware of the traffic conditions and it can be quite stressful. But when you're in a traffic jam, you can relax. Now, those of you who are girls, if you didn't do your makeup before you left, traffic jam's a great time just to check up and see what's okay. You guys, you can check the latest scores of the EPL. Or you can make your phone calls because you're not driving. Traffic jams are cool. Traffic jams are great. They stop you, get a bit of rest and relaxation. So enjoy them when they come and don't get mad and angry at them. Because, you know, they're things you can't control. So there's many parts of modern life actually are very conducive to meditation. But we waste and we don't see it. Every time you get stopped at the red traffic light. Brilliant. Someone told me this story, but I haven't seen it. I think they just made it up. But it was a great idea. They said that in Delhi, the capital of India, which is a very spiritual country, at least it used to be, that in the capital of India, when the traffic lights went red, they never said stop. They weren't called stop lights anymore. They had the five letters, R-E-L-A-X. Relax. So wouldn't that be a wonderful idea in Singapore? If anyone knows the Minister of Transport or whatever, on the big traffic lights, when the red traffic light sort of goes red, have the letters, maybe in black or however you can read them, relax. So they're no longer called red stop lights, they're called relaxed lights. Wouldn't that be a wonderful addition to the Singapore health? And imagine just all these tourists coming to take photographs of your relaxed lights. Give it a try. So all those opportunities are there for you and I, so please take them and have a wonderful time and have a beautiful meditation when you leave. This afternoon, we're going to do just a quick bit of a housekeeping and other little bits and pieces. You've got some certificates I'm going to give out to people in a few moments. But, you know, these are for the people who've got jhanas. So if you haven't got a jhana, you're not going to get it. There's only two or three who's not going to get certificates. There for everyone. So afterwards, you know, it's clean-up time and just you have your lunch at 11 o'clock. For those of you who are staying here, how many are staying here overnight tonight? Oh, quite a few of you. Although, what are they doing for... Are you going to have a dinner tonight or keep on the eight precepts? Or? Well, I can't cook. But I'm sure you can find something to cook up there or save something from lunch. There's enough, okay, enough left, so have something for this evening. But just have a quiet time. So it's not, retreat's over, party! Yeah! No, because you're living in a very quiet place. So just relax. Please make use of the meditation hall in the afternoon. Those people staying here in the evening. If If you don't like the meditation hall, over in your rooms, they're very quiet there. So make use of the place, go for a nice walk. You can always go to Bodhidharma if it gets noisy because people are setting up for tomorrow. So make use of the place. Tomorrow it's crazy time because a couple of thousand people come here, but it's a celebration, you can enjoy that. It's such good energy, people get so happy when they sort of spend just the today offering this katina over at Bodhidharma. So if you are here for that, that's a wonderful experience. Just the joy of sharing and giving is a great opportunity. But those of you who go early, please have safe flights. And remember my story that if you do have an unsafe flight, not with Singapore, they're always safe, but in some of these other cheap airlines, which we don't encourage you to fly, we always encourage you to fly an SIA. Or maybe Malaysian, because a few Malaysians here. If you do die, please remember, we're all going to die anyway. And dying in an aircraft crash or explosion is the best way you can possibly die. It's one of the best. Instant cremation. If you die up in the air, ashes scattered at no extra cost. The higher the explosion, the closer you are to heaven. And of course your poor family have to pay so much money for a funeral. Don't have to pay a cent. It's done for free. And you get money from the airline. It's the best way. So it's great compassion. If you're going to die at all, out of compassion for your family and friends, keep it easy for them. Aircraft explosion or crash is the very best. Best way to die in the whole world. Even the best of all is actually, if you crash, if you are having to make an emergency landing anywhere, James, see if you can land in the cemetery. That's really convenient. As a pilot, you can tell your managers that's a suggestion. The best way to emergency landing. Anyway, so are there any questions or comments before we finish?